Welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, December 22nd. I'm Dagna, your reader for the next hour. We will begin with the mini-editorial on the front page, and today's mini-editorial is written by Lauren Strait of Charter Oak, Iowa, and Lauren writes, "Why can't the Sioux City Journal or any other media air a positive event during the pandemic? I know it is out there and easy to find." Again, this was written by Lauren Strait from Charter Oak. Our first story is headlined, "Cone Park to Open Wednesday, Limit Capacity Amid Pandemic." And this story was written by Dolly Butts of the Sioux City Journal. As Cone Park prepares to open for its fourth winter season on Wednesday amid the global COVID-19 pandemic, Sioux City Recreation Supervisor John Burns is confident that visitors to the park are going to have an experience that is better than ever before. "Since the majority of our stuff happens outside, we're pretty excited that we're going to be able to remain open," Burns said. "We're going to limit our capacity, so you're going to have less lines, less people in general to contend with. Between December 2019 and March 2020, 25,731 people visited the park at 3800 Line Drive, which boasts a 700-foot tubing hill, bunny hill, and a 5,400-square-foot ice skating rink. That number was an increase of nearly 6,000 people from the year before. This season, however, due to restrictions imposed to prevent the spread of the novel coronavirus, Burns said the park, which frequently sells out on weekends, will limit capacity by 50% to start. Under normal operating circumstances, the park's tubing hill, which usually has at least 6 lanes open, can accommodate up to 250 users per session. It is going to be a little bit of a moving scale," Bird said of capacity. "Obviously, we've never opened in a pandemic, so if it's way too crowded, we can dial it back, or we can ramp it up if there's plenty of room. Visitors are asked to plan ahead and purchase their tickets online in order to minimize ticket window lines. Tickets can be purchased at webtrack.sioux-city.org. Once at the park, visitors are asked to practice social distancing by staying at least 6 feet away from others, about the width of 2 snow tubes. Masks are required at all times, both inside and outside the park's lodge, unless visitors are seated at a table. The lodge features 2 flat-screen TVs, free Wi-Fi, and an LED fireplace. It also has lockers and a concession area where pizza, chicken strips, fries, hot chocolate, Blue Bunny ice cream treats, and more can be purchased. We are going to hope that people won't hang out and take up space in the lodge since it is so limited. We are going to ask people to keep moving," Burns said. "People are still going to be able to come in and warm up, but it's just going to be a little more of a quick warm-up for 10 to 15 minutes, have a hot chocolate, and keep on moving sort of thing." Besides the main tubing hill, Cone Park also offers Blue Bunny Hill, which is a shorter hill designed for people of all ages. "Take the carpet lift up and exit to the left at the blue signs for the Bunny Hill. When park goers need a break from the snow-covered slope, they can also warm themselves around a brick fire pit." "There's minor operating stuff," Burns said, "of non-pandemic related changes being implemented at the park this season. We regraded our bunny hill for the younger kids to make that better and more efficient. But as far as the winter stuff goes, it's pretty much the same. We have been able to build on our success every year." The Iowa Tourism Bureau and the Travel Federation of Iowa bestowed the 2019 Outstanding Attraction honor on Cone Park. Besides tubing, visitors can also skate at the ice skating rink during their time at Cone Park. Skate rentals are available. In the summer months, the skating rink is converted to a splash pad. Visitors also have access to a 2-mile trail loop. "We are prepared to be one of the only things that can be open. Because we operate almost entirely outside, we have space, and we can easily physically distance people," Burns said. "We are family outdoor recreation, so we are expecting a large demand." Our next story is from the City Council meeting last night, and the headline is, "Council approves first reading of revised fireworks ordinance that would fine landowners." The Sioux City Council took a step toward holding private landowners liable for fireworks violations occurring on their property, even if someone else discharged the fireworks. The council voted 4-1 in favor of the first reading of an amended ordinance that would add a municipal infraction penalty for property owners who permit fireworks violations to occur on their property. Councilman Pete Gretkin cast a lone no vote. The city's ordinance allows fireworks to be legally discharged from 1 to 11 p.m. on July 3rd and July 4th, and from 1 p.m. on December 31st until 12:30 a.m. on January 1st. However, some individuals have been discharging fireworks 2 to 3 weeks before and after the July 4th and New Year's Eve holidays. Under the current ordinance, direct violators are charged with simple misdemeanors. Illegal fireworks discharge carries a minimum $250 fine on private property and a $500 fine on city property. The revised ordinance adds fines for property owners of $250 for the first offense, $500 for a second offense, and $1,000 for a third or subsequent offense. Gretkin questioned how the revised ordinance could be enforced and whether it would really solve the problem for pet owners, veterans, and numerous other residents who have complained about the unpredictable loud bangs and screeches. I think if we had that ordinance that prohibits it, I honestly believe you will see less fireworks, he said. The people are doing it now because they know it's legal to do. City Attorney Nicole Dubois told Gretkin a witness would be needed in order to issue a citation. Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore noted that fireworks debris and smoke could serve as evidence if a witness isn't available. The way that it's written is that you permit the discharge on your property, so we would have to prove you allowed it to take place, Dubois said. Fireworks complaints made to the Sioux City Police Department increased 80% for the month of June compared to a year ago. From June 1st to the afternoon of June 29th, 306 complaints had been logged with the department, an increase of 136 complaints from June 2019. Mayor Bob Scott said the police department is going to have to be serious about the ordinance in order to get compliance. Like Gretkin, Scott said he doesn't have a lot of confidence that the revised ordinance is going to curb fireworks violations. Moore and Mark Solheim, a Sioux City resident, plan to work together on public service announcements next year that will ask residents to refrain from discharging fireworks outside of the dates and times allowed by the ordinance. Councilwoman Julie Shaner said she thinks the public service announcements are really going to do a lot for the city, encouraging residents to either follow the rules or lose the privileges. I do think last year was a bit of an anomaly. Not to make an excuse, but I think people were so pent up and they were so fed up and they were getting out and just blowing them off, she said, referencing the COVID-19 pandemic. Yes, I know fireworks were abused. I believe that. I know they were. I heard it and I saw it myself. Moore said he has full faith and confidence that residents will rise to the occasion and follow the ordinance. We do not want to take the fun away from the discharging of fireworks. We get that it's a celebration of the freedom that we have. But by the same token, we don't want to cause injury or damage or anything else with people that are our neighbors, he said. We don't want the situation we had last year. A vote on the second reading of the revised ordinance is scheduled for next Monday's meeting. Numerous noise complaints in the days leading up to 2017's 4th of July, Iowa's first with legalized fireworks discharge in 84 years, led council members to vote in December that year to shrink the fireworks discharge window from 10 days to 2. Our next headline, zero COVID-19 deaths reported in Siouxland Monday. No Siouxland counties reported any COVID-19 deaths on Monday. However, the 14-day positivity rates remained high in the northwest Iowa counties. Crawford County led the state with a rate of 24%. Buena Vista County had the sixth highest rate, 21.3%, while Ida County ranked eighth with 20.3%, followed by Cherokee County in ninth at 20.1%. Siouxland District Health Department reported 25 new cases of the novel coronavirus Monday in Woodbury County. According to state statistics, the county, which had a positivity rate of 15% on Monday, had 11,850 total cases of the virus as of Monday evening. District Health reported that 56 patients were hospitalized Monday at either Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center or Unity Point Health, St. Luke's, up 6 from Sunday. Of those patients, 35 were hospitalized for treatment of COVID-19. Another 21 in the hospital have the virus but are hospitalized for other reasons. Of the total, 27 are Woodbury County residents. As of Monday, 142 long-term care facilities in Iowa are suffering COVID-19 outbreaks. Cumulatively, long-term care outbreaks have been implicated in 1,136 of Iowa's 3,533 COVID-19 deaths. 26 long-term care facilities in Northwest Iowa, spread across every county except Clay County, are currently suffering outbreaks, according to the IDPH data. At Acura Healthcare of Sioux City, 42 have tested positive. Of those, 29 are considered recovered. At the Sunrise Community in Sioux City, 53 have tested positive. Of these, 26 are considered recovered. At Pioneer Valley Living and Rehab in Sergeant Bluff, 14 have tested positive. None of these are yet considered recovered. At Acura Healthcare of Lamar's, 26 have tested positive. Of these, only one is considered recovered. At the Elmwood Care Center in Onawa, 40 have tested positive. Of these, 15 are considered recovered. At the Hillcrest Healthcare Center in Haywarden, 35 have tested positive. Of these, 28 are considered recovered. At the Pleasant Acres Care Center in Hull, 18 have tested positive. Of these, 13 are considered recovered. At the Prairie Ridge Care Center in Orange City, 17 have tested positive. Of these, 4 are considered recovered. At Royal Meadows and Sioux Center, 26 have tested positive. One of these are yet considered recovered. At the Hague Memorial Health Center in Rock Valley, 33 have tested positive. Of these, 26 are considered recovered. At the Good Samaritan Society in Holstein, 55 have tested positive. Of these, 35 are considered recovered. At the Willowdale Wellness Village in Battle Creek, 65 have tested positive. Of these, 11 are considered recovered. At Twilight Acres in Wall Lake, 33 have tested positive. Of these, 17 are considered recovered. At the Black Hawk Life Care Center in Lakeview, 31 have tested positive. Of these, 15 are considered recovered. At Acura Healthcare of Cherokee, 50 have tested positive. None of these are yet considered recovered. At the Heartland Care Center in Marcus, 12 have tested positive. Of these, 4 are considered recovered. At Cherokee Specialty Care in Cherokee, 32 have tested positive. Of these, 16 are considered recovered. At Sanford Senior Care in Sheldon, 25 have tested positive. Of these, 17 are considered recovered. At the Prairie View Home in Sanborn, 58 have tested positive. Of these, 47 are considered recovered. At Pleasant View Home in Albert City, 22 have tested positive. Of these, 9 are considered recovered. At the Methodist Manor Retirement Community in Storm Lake, 22 have tested positive. 12 are considered recovered. At the Rock Rapids Health Center in Rock Rapids, 20 have tested positive. None of these are yet considered recovered. At Country View Manor in Sibley, 34 have tested positive. 14 are considered recovered. At Acura Healthcare of Milford, 45 have tested positive. 30 are considered recovered. At Manila Manor in Manila, 20 have tested positive. None of these are yet considered recovered. At the Eventide Lutheran Home in Denison, 56 have tested positive. 36 are considered recovered. Previously reported outbreaks at other facilities have apparently resolved. IDPH does not report deaths at specific facilities. We'll now move to news briefs. And our first one is victim in shooting outside Mavericks identified. Sioux City. The victim of an early Sunday shooting outside a Sioux City gentleman's club remained in the hospital Monday while police searched for a suspect. Police said Krista Krukenberg, 28, of Sioux Falls, was recovering from her injuries at Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center. She was shot outside Mavericks Gentlemen's Club 416 Cunningham Drive at about 1:24 a.m. Sunday during a fight in the parking lot. Officers responded to the call, found her lying on the ground, suffering from multiple gunshot wounds. In a Monday news release, Sioux City Community Policing Sergeant Jeremy McClure said that Krakenberg, who is a waitress bartender at Mavericks but was there Sunday on her night off, was among a group of people watching an altercation between two people when the suspect, who was not involved in the fight, fired shots toward the fight. Detectives have yet to determine if Krakenberg was the intended target or was unintentionally struck. The suspect was described as a short, black male in his 20s. He is considered armed and dangerous. Police are following up on leads, but are unable to release his identity at this time, McClure said. Anyone who has information about the incident is asked to contact the Sioux City Police Department at 279-6440. Launchpad appoints new executive director, Sioux City. Launchpad Children's Museum has promoted Carrie Lebowich to executive director. Lebowich began working for the museum as a volunteer in 2015. During the past 5 years, she has held multiple positions for Launchpad, including administrative assistant, development coordinator, director of donor care, and most recently, operations manager. Carrie is very passionate about the museum and the children it serves. She believes wholeheartedly in the benefits that play has on the development of children. She is committed to providing all children the play they deserve. With her experience, she brings a great vision and 5 years of ideas that will help continue to grow and launch the museum to the next level, said Board President Nick Roll. Lebowich said she is excited to begin building and growing with her team and to meet current demands and future goals. A goal of mine has always been to see generations of people come through Launchpad's doors, first as children and then as parents. I'm focused on continuing to create and improve the museum so it's new and exciting for years to come. Man pleads guilty to COVID-19-related benefit fraud. A Schaller, Iowa man has pleaded guilty to receiving $19,000 in fraudulent unemployment insurance benefits related to the coronavirus pandemic. Alvin Rex, 61, entered his plea Friday in U.S. District Court in Sioux City to one count of mail fraud. Rex received unemployment payments in May and June in the names of Arizona and Massachusetts residents, plus a weekly $600 payments through the Federal CARES Act, which provided emergency assistance to people affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. An investigation found the funds deposited into a Storm Lake, Iowa bank account, from which Rex made cash withdrawals and then mailed the money to a Maryland address, and others that he was given by a person whom he has never met, but has said he has an online romantic relationship with. According to court documents, federal authorities believe Rex is acting as a money mule for a larger criminal organization and that the money will ultimately reach Egypt. Man pleads guilty to federal drug charge. A Sioux City man awaiting sentencing for stabbing has pled guilty to selling meth. Jason Persons, 42, pleaded guilty Friday in the U.S. District Court in Sioux City to one count of conspiracy to distribute a controlled substance. Persons were indicted in September for selling or conspiring to sell at least 50 grams of meth on August 16th and 17th. No sentencing date has been set for the drug charge. Persons is scheduled to be sentenced in Woodbury County District Court in February for the March 19th stabbing of another man in a Sioux City hotel room. Persons pleaded guilty in September to assault, causing serious injury. Persons and the victim got into a fight at the American, 4230 South Lewis Boulevard, and Persons stabbed the victim in the leg and on the side. Teen charged with sexually abusing boy. A Sioux City teenager is in custody on charges of sexually abusing a boy. Alexander Raff, 17, was arrested Friday on 5 counts of second-degree sexual abuse. He is currently being held in the Woodbury County Jail on a $50,000 bond. According to a complaint filed in Woodbury County District Court, Raff forced a boy under age 12 to participate in sex acts on numerous occasions from December 2019 through August. During questioning from police, Raff admitted to committing the acts, the complaint said. Contractor accused of bilking victim of $14,000. Sioux City. A contractor was arrested Friday and charged with accepting more than $14,000 to build a garage and then spending the money rather than performing the work. Drew Wilshire Gerdes, 24, of Lamar's, was booked into the Woodbury County Jail on a charge of first-degree theft. According to a complaint filed in the case, the victim gave Wilshire Gerdes a cashier's check for $14,243.96 on August 12th to build a garage. The check was deposited into the account of Wilshire Home Services. Police checking the bank records found that the money had been spent. Wilshire Gerdes told the victim he had sold the business to another man, a transient who told police that he was given $50 to sign the contract transferring the business to him, the complaint said. Man pleads not guilty to staging robbery, Spencer, Iowa. A Spencer man has pleaded not guilty to helping stage the robbery of a Casey store with his girlfriend to cover up her previous theft from the store. Jason Archer, 40, entered his written pleas Monday in Clay County District Court to charges of second-degree theft, third-degree burglary, and conspiracy to commit a felony. According to court documents, Archer and Cody Wolthouse, 31, took approximately $3,000 from the store safe on February 14th while no other employees were in the store. Wolthouse drove Archer from the store at 800 South Grand Avenue and then reported to police that she had been robbed at gunpoint, court documents said. Wolthouse admitted to police that a few days prior to the stage robbery, she had taken home approximately $2,000 from the store rather than depositing it in the bank. She told police she had planned to replace the money with her paycheck, but was unable to do so, leading her to plan the fake robbery with Archer to cover up the theft. Wolthouse, also of Spencer, previously pleaded not guilty to two counts of second-degree theft and single counts of conspiracy to commit a felony and making false reports. Siouxland fugitive arrested Sunday. A man sought by the U.S. Marshals Service Northern Iowa Fugitive Task Force has been arrested. Deputy Peter Zellmer of the U.S. Marshals Service said in an email Monday that Carter Brinkerhoff, 26, was arrested by Sioux City Police Sunday night. Brinkerhoff was wanted on warrants out of Woodbury County for felony drug violations. Siouxland man sought by Fugitive Task Force. The U.S. Marshals Service Northern Iowa Fugitive Task Force is seeking the public's assistance in locating the following person. Philip Pringle, 50. He is 5'11" tall and weighs 280 pounds. Pringle is wanted by the U.S. Marshals Service for violations of his pretrial release. He is on pretrial release for conspiracy to distribute meth. Anyone with information can call the Northern Iowa Fugitive Task Force at 712-252-0211 or email siouxlands.mostwanted@usdoj.gov. Nebraska proposes $230 million new prison to fight crowding. Nebraska's Correction Department will propose to lawmakers a new $230 million prison to reduce chronic overcrowding that's likely to get worse, the agency's director said Monday. Corrections Director Scott Frax will present the plan in the upcoming legislative session with backing from his boss, Governor Pete Ricketts. State officials have tried for years to ease crowding in Nebraska's prisons by expanding parole, changing some sentencing laws, and creating new diversion programs. But the population has continued to grow, and the department has struggled to fill prison jobs, especially at the prison in Tecumseh, a small town more than 50 miles away from both Omaha and Lincoln. Here's the reality. We need a new correctional facility, Frank said in a briefing with reporters. He said a new prison is truly the best construction value for our state compared to other options that state officials have explored, such as expanding current facilities. Frake said the new prison would have a modern design with improved safety features and lower utility costs. He said the estimated $230 million construction costs would be spread over roughly 4.5 years and the facility would cost about $34 million a year to operate. The operational costs could be reduced, though, by converting the maximum security Nebraska State Penitentiary in Lincoln to a minimum security facility and making a similar conversion at the state's work ethic camp in western Nebraska. If lawmakers approve the plan in the 2021 session, the new prison likely would not open until 2025 at the earliest. The plan could face resistance from some lawmakers who have pushed for more changes to sentencing laws and more rehabilitative programs as the best way to reduce crowding. The new prison would add 1,512 new prison beds in Nebraska's prison system, for a total of 6,562 in all facilities. Nebraska currently has 5,540 adult inmates in facilities that are collectively designed for about 4,050. The inmate population is expected to increase to 6,438 by the end of 2025, according to the JFA Institute, a prison research group. Frake said he doesn't yet know where the prison would be located, but the need for staffing and outside rehabilitation services would likely rule out small towns. He said the constant struggle to find workers who will commute to Tecumseh has haunted the department ever since the facility opened in 2001. NU joins other universities in alliance to bring Space Command to OFIT. Four universities, led by the University of Nebraska, are joining forces in making the case that the new headquarters for the U.S. Space Command should be located in the Cornhusker State. In an op-ed published Sunday in the Capital Gazette in Annapolis, Maryland, the coalition said Nebraska offers an unmatched quality of life and a strong support for the military and education. The pitch from NU President Ted Carter, Mitch Daniels, president of Purdue University, Mark Hagerot, chancellor of the North Dakota University System, and Richard Myers, president of Kansas State University, aims to create a bigger value-added proposition. Should the Space Command headquarters be located at OFIT Air Force Base in Bellevue, one of six finalists announced by the Air Force last month, the university partners have pledged to create a higher education space research and workforce alliance. As presidents of four diverse Midwestern public universities, all founded with a mission to teach, do research, and conduct outreach for the greater good, we are in close contact about our opportunities to collaborate in support of the space mission, their op-ed reads. Carter said the partnership began to coalesce in the last 3 weeks in conversations and drafting of white paper exploring the concept. They hope the op-ed piece is read by top officials at the Pentagon. "We're moving fast," Carter told the Journal Star. "None of the other finalists can do anything we're doing here in terms of academic prowess." If the Department of the Air Force chooses to locate its Space Command in Nebraska over finalists in New Mexico, Florida, Texas, Alabama, and Colorado, the university leaders in the alliance said they stand ready to provide support in a number of ways. Then I have a quick FAQ that was a question that was submitted to the journal. And the question is, I saw a story when I looked at your website this morning, and by the afternoon, it was not on your homepage anymore. What happened? And the answer is, because there's new content coming in, it pushes those earlier stories off the homepage. They're still on the site. You can either search for the story, look for the little magnifying glass at the top of the page, or look in one of the categories, such as sports, opinion, entertainment, where it will reside. To make sure you have a chance to look at a story later on, just share it on social media and you will be able to find it when you want it. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, December 22nd, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. We'll now turn to today's obituary. And our first one is from Dixon, Nebraska. Jeffrey S. Wonder, 57, of Dixon, passed away unexpectedly on Saturday, December 19th, at the Providence Medical Center in Wayne, Nebraska. Services for Jeffrey will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of the Wintz Funeral Home in Laurel, Nebraska. Memorials may be directed to the family or to the Dixon Volunteer Fire Department. Jeff was born March 24, 1963, in Lincoln, Nebraska, to Robert and Janet Wunder. Jeff graduated from Northeast High School in Lincoln and went on to study computer science at Southeast Community College in Lincoln. He loved anything to do with computers. He and his best friend, Scott Dodge, created their own computer program while in high school. On June 14, 2014, Jeff married Sherry Popovitz in Lincoln. Sherry and Jeff joked that he was Sherry's IT guy. At the time of his death, Jeff was employed by Splash City and Sioux City. Jeff had many hobbies and especially enjoyed the outdoors. He created a group called the Wandering Wonders in order to share his experiences of camping and outdoor life. Jeff loved going on adventures and sharing those adventures with this community. He also loved storm chasing and was an administrator for the Siouxland Severe Weather Network. One of Jeff's favorite pastimes was grilling and smoking food with Chip Young and his wife Suzanne. They loved to compete and compare the food they would grill and smoke. Jeff, Sherry, Chip, and Suzanne formed an eating club, and they especially enjoyed playing Uno together. Jeff also enjoyed his pets, his bird Destiny, his cats Aurora and Ariel, and his dog Athena. He and Destiny would talk and argue back and forth frequently. Jeff's family often joked about him being surrounded by all girls, since all of their pets were females. Jeff was a member of the Dixon Volunteer Fire and Rescue and was proud to have the title of Fireman Jeff Wunder. Another very important part of Jeff's life that he shared with his father was the Masonic Lodge. He was a member of the East Lincoln Masonic Lodge No. 210 and held many positions over the years, including Worshipful Brother, Secretary, and Worshipful Master two separate times. He was one of the youngest Worshipful Masters ever appointed. Jeff was a wonderful caretaker. He was always compassionate and not only cared for family and friends, but the community around him. He was a loved member of his family and community and will be terribly missed. Jeff is survived by his beloved wife, Sherry, stepdaughter, Amber, his father, Robert, stepmother, Diane, uncles, Ron, Jerry, aunts, Judy, and Sharon, and many cousins, nieces, and nephews. Jeff was preceded in death by his mother, Janet, and grandparents, George and Audrey Wunder, and Conrad and Molly Schlager. Regina Elnora Altmans, Lamars, Iowa, 96, died Thursday, December 17th. Services at a later date at Grace Lutheran Church of Lamars. Arrangements are under the direction of Maura Johnson Funeral Home in Lamars. Denison, James George Jim Beeman, 73, passed away Friday, December 18th at Eventide Lutheran Home. A private gravesite service with military honors by Denison American Legion Post No. 8 and the Iowa Army National Guard will be today in the Deloitte Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the family. Due to COVID-19, a celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements at the Huber Funeral Home in Denison. James George Jim Beeman was born August 1, 1947 to George and Ione Beeman in Denison. He received his early education in Deloitte and graduated from Denison High School with the class of 1968. Throughout high school, Jim participated in 4-H and football. On January 6, 1969, Jim was drafted into the United States Army during the Vietnam War, and shortly after his deployment, he was injured out on patrol in Vietnam. Due to the serious injuries, he was honorably discharged on March 12, 1970. After returning from the war, Jim farmed with his father, George, until they retired. After George's passing in 1999, Jim moved to Denison with his mother, Ione, in 2001. He was very devoted to his faith and was a longtime member of the United Methodist Church in Denison. Jim loved his community, and you would often find him participating at bingo night or attending any Denison Monarchs sporting events. He was a member of the Denison American Legion Post No. 8 and the Booster Club. One of Jim's greatest enjoyments was his 2006 Mustang convertible, attending the Sturgis Mustang Rally, area car shows, and parades. He is survived by his mother, Ione, of Denison, sisters Joan of Kingsley and Linda of Holstein, nieces and nephews Mark, Dean, John and Julie, and her special friend Rob, both stationed with the Army at Camp Humphreys in South Korea, and cousins, great-nieces, nephews, and many friends. He was preceded in death by his father, George. Sioux City. James W. Boyd, 79, died Friday, December 18th in Sioux City. Service will be 6 p.m. today at Christie Smith Funeral Home's Morningside Chapel, 1801 Morningside Avenue, with visitation 1 hour prior. The family is requiring that masks be worn and social distancing be observed during the visitation and service. James Jim Wilson Boyd, the son of Lester and Marcia Boyd, was born February 28, 1941 in Alton, Iowa, Illinois. He earned a bachelor's degree in 1964 in both business and psychology from the University of Iowa. In 1967, he went to flight school in Billings, Montana, and later flew commercial aircraft for United Airlines for 16 years. Jim was a proud member of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, as well as the Airline Pilots Association. His love of flying was so profound that he owned several private planes at various times and found much joy in flying his family into small-town airports for breakfast fly-ins, as he called them. He accumulated over 25,000 flight hours over the years and retired at the rank of captain in 2001. Jim would have continued flying until his last days, but unfortunately, due to health-related issues, that chapter of his life came to a close in 2013. In addition to his passion for flying, he was a longtime property owner and real estate entrepreneur. Spanning a 40-year period, he owned or rented over 500 units. At the height of his real estate career, he owned more than 200 houses at one time. Jim became an accomplished carpenter, sider, and roofer, and could build or repair almost anything in a house. Jim is survived by his daughters, Julianne and Jennifer, all of Sioux City. Grandchildren, Alexander D'Amato, Dr. Allison D'Amato, Raymond Boyle, Dannon Simmons, and Candace Mailer. A great-grandchild, Jet Simmons, siblings Kenneth of Door County, Wisconsin, and Caroline of Ottawa, Illinois, and many other relatives and friends. He was preceded in death by his parents and the mother of his daughters, Mary Arrett. The family has requested that memorials be directed to the Sioux City Humane Society. Sioux City. Rodney Allen Lux, 51, of Sioux City, passed away Sunday, December 20th, at a Sioux City hospital with his family by his side. Graveside services will be 11 a.m. Wednesday at St. Joseph Catholic Cemetery in Salix, with the Reverend Michael Erpelding officiating. Arrangements are under the direction of Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff. Rodney was born in Sioux City to Daryl and Carol Lux on May 3, 1969. He was raised in Salix, Iowa, and attended Westwood Community Schools in Sloan. Rodney worked two primary jobs throughout his life, as a dishwasher at Perkins in Sioux City and at Winnevegas in Sloan. Rodney loved to work and was a hard worker. Rodney enjoyed family get-togethers, being on his electronics, listening to the police scanner, riding his bicycle miles across Siouxland, literally, and also driving his car. He was really proud of his recent car purchase. Rodney is survived by his parents, Daryl and Carol, of Sioux City, and longtime residents of Salix. Five siblings, Ron of Sloan, Steve of Sioux City, Bob of Ponca, Nebraska, Debbie of Hubbard, Nebraska, and Teresa of Elkhorn, Nebraska, and many nephews, nieces, great-nephews, and great-nieces. Rodney was preceded in death by his grandparents. Paul bearers will be Ron Lux, Bob Lux, Sean Jensen, Jacob Jensen, Derek Jensen, and Carter Nordstrom. Memorials can be directed to the Warming Shelter, 916 Nebraska Street, Sioux City. The family of Rodney wishes to extend our sincere thanks to the Mercy One ICU staff who were exceptional to Rodney and our family in his last days. Hartington, Nebraska. Vernon Duane Conkin, 89, of Hartington, died Saturday, December 19th, at the Parkview Haven Nursing Home in Coleridge, Nebraska. Funeral services and burial are tentatively planned for his 90th birthday on June 10th, 2021, pending improvement of the COVID-19 pandemic to allow family and friends to gather safely. Services will be at the Wentz Funeral Home in Huntington with interment in Bloomfield beside his wife Arliss. He was born on June 10, 1931, to John Carl and Selma Konkin at home on the family farm northeast of Coleridge. He attended country school through the eighth grade and worked as a farmhand and mechanic throughout his life. Vernon married Arliss Mifflin of Bloomfield, Nebraska in Yankton, South Dakota on April 29, 1966. From this union, four children were born. The family resided on a farm west of Coleridge until 1969 when they moved to Neely, Nebraska for Vernon's work. They remained in Neely throughout the 70s until moving to Huntington in 1981. Vernon is survived by his sister Gladys of Huntington, sister-in-laws Helen of Bloomfield, Viola of Coleridge, Dolores of Huntington, and Loretta of Coleridge. His sons, CW3 retired Kevin Konkin of London, England, Curtis Konkin of Cedar Creek, Texas, and Corey Konkin of Atlantic, Iowa. His son-in-law Brian of Norfolk, and seven grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his wife Arliss, his daughter Lisa, brothers Marvin, Norman, Elmer, Clarence, Wendell, and Gerald, and sister-in-law Lorna. And that concludes the obituaries for today. We'll now move to the sports section. And our first sports story concerns Briarcliff football. And the headline is LaDage Provides Fresh Start. And this is a new football coach, and his name is Shane LaDage, but I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. It's spelled LaDage. So since I'm not sure of the spelling, this pronunciation, I'm just going to pronounce it LaDage. Shane LaDage is going to give all members of the Briarcliff University football team a fresh start. LaDage was introduced as the new head coach, football coach for the Chargers on Monday, and he isn't interested in looking at film or asking what has happened in the past. LaDage is only focused on the future. I really feel like there's a shared vision for developing the student athletes of Briarcliff between myself and the leadership at our university, LaDage said. We are going to be looking for high achievers in the classroom, the community, and the football field. It's going to be an extremely demanding program, but we're going to have a lot of fun. LaDage knew that if given the chance, even after the first Zoom call with athletic director Nick Scandrett, he'd take the job if offered. LaDage told his family that he felt eager to come to Sioux City in the interview process. I was attracted to Briarcliff as a whole, LaDage said. I'm a competitor. If you don't want to compete with us in this league, then get out of town. You don't want to go somewhere and hop in and think it's going to be a breeze. I'm excited to be part of that process. LaDage served as an assistant coach for the Minot State University Beavers since 2015 and was named associate head coach in 2019. LaDage has held a range of responsibilities than MSU football, including co-offensive coordinator, special teams coach, and interim head coach. Most recently, he was the team's recruiting coordinator and wide receivers coach. LaDage has coached at the University of Wyoming from 2014 to 15, St. Joseph's College from 2013 to 14, and Southwest Minnesota State 2011 to 2013. I think the most where I've grown is about what I can do for the players, LaDage said. I've learned that it takes time to do things the right way, and we're not in it for the quick fix. The former Beavers assistant coach takes over BCU program that went 1-8 this season after going 5-6 last year and 6-5 during the 2018 season. The Chargers were not as efficient as they had hoped to be this season. BCU ranked third to last among NAIA teams in the nation in offensive scoring, with an average of 9.6 points per game. BCU's offense created just 11 touchdowns and its yards per game averaged 201. The Chargers ran for 739 yards and they had 1,070 passing yards. The Chargers were held to 10 or fewer points in 7 games this season. LaDage hopes to see what he has through winter workouts and evaluate what action needs to be taken from there. I told the players this morning, I'm not going to watch film from last year and see what they did, LaDage said. I don't want to have any preconceived notions. We have to get our best players in space. We need to be able to run our quarterback if we can. It all starts up front. We have to run the ball. One of the first tasks on LaDage's agenda is to get out and recruit. He was a recruiting coordinator at MSU, and he wants to make Western Iowa and Southwest Minnesota among the areas where the Chargers hope to find some talent. LaDage hopes to start making connections with the local high school football coaches immediately. We are going to start out by recruiting in our backyard, and we have to start winning over some kids in Sioux City, LaDage said. We are going to put a premium on character and academics. Character and academic high achievers are the number one thing we will look for at Briarcliff. The hire of LaDage comes a month after the Chargers dismissed Dennis Wagner and other assistant coaches from the program. Our next story is Briarcliff also, but it's basketball instead of football. And the headline is Chargers grind out OT win. Madison, South Dakota. The Briarcliff men's basketball team wasn't worried about the deficit it faced in the final minute Monday. The Chargers trailed by 7 points with 47 seconds remaining, and they erased that en route to a 79-75 win over Dakota State. Nick Hoyt started the late run with two-point basket, and shortly after, Jaden Kleisenslink made one of two free throws. On the Chargers' next possession, Klein Hesselink hit a shot to get the Chargers within two, and Connor Groves tied the game at 63-63 with 15 seconds left. Kleisenslink forced a turnover on the Trojans' final possession. The two teams traded baskets to start the first couple minutes of the overtime period, but like Kleisenslink hit the go-ahead basket that turned out to be a three-point play with 18 seconds left. Quentin Vasa led BCU with 19 points. Groves scored 16 points, while Ethan Friedel had 11 points. And our next brief story is Sveirven receives Summit's weekly accolade. South Dakota senior center Hannah Jervin, and that's how it must be said, Jervin, has been named the Summit League Player of the Week. Jervin tallied a career-best 31 points and 21 rebounds in South Dakota's 84-68 road win at Bradley on Thursday. She posted the first 30-20 game by a Coyote since NCAA Division II Player of the Year Mandy Kupel in 2003. It also marked the only 30-20 performance by a player in NCAA Division I this season. Her 21 rebounds ranked fourth in the NCAA for a single-game performance this year. Jervin added 15 points, 7 boards, and 3 blocks in limited minutes on Sunday at Oklahoma. Hailing from Rogers, Minnesota, Jervin leads the Summit in scoring, 8 in scoring, field goal percentages, and blocked shots. She also ranks second in the league for rebounds and is one of 39 players nationally averaging double-double. This sparks a second straight Summit League weekly honor for the Coyotes, with Chloe Lamb earning the nod a week ago. And then our next one is Iowa State-Chicago State called off. The Iowa State-Chicago State men's basketball game scheduled for Tuesday, December 22nd, has been canceled due to an insufficient number of players available in the CSU program. Obviously, this is disappointing for our student athletes to have another game canceled, but we understand the situation Chicago is in, Iowa State head coach Steve Prohm said. We look forward to returning to Hilton Coliseum to face Baylor on January 2nd. And now we'll move from the college programs to high school programs with the headline, North Snaps Long League Skid. The North High School girls basketball team of Sioux City broke a 46 conference losing streak on Monday as the Stars beat Council Bluffs Jefferson 62-36. It is the first time since the 2016-17 season in which North won a game in the Missouri River Conference. North's win on Monday also snapped a 7-game losing streak over the Yellow Jacks. Madison Craighill hit 4 three-pointers, and she was the only Stars double-digit scorer with 22 points. Hannah Morganson had 8 points. Her final 2 three-pointers came in the final minute of the third quarter, as the Stars scored 24 points in the 8 minutes after halftime. Sydney Rexes also had 5 steals in the win. And the next game is Sergeant Bluff Luton 51, Western Christian 47. SBL junior Emma Salker led the Warriors on Monday with 23 points in Monday's win. She made 8 of 16 shots. Peyton Hardy also had 14 points and 10 rebounds. The Warriors shot 40% from the floor and went 2-for-9 from the 3-point area. Western Christian's top scorer was Lydia Van Clay with 14 points. OABCIG 64, River Valley 11. The Falcons led 36-9 at halftime on Monday, and their defense held the Wolverines to 2 second-half points. Carly Murphy of OABCIG with 19 points, while Riley Schoenbeck scored 12. The Wolverines didn't have a score in double figures, but Sarah Holtz led River Valley with 4 points. The next game, Westwood 58, Wakefield 49. Wakefield led for most of the game on Monday, but the Rebels made their free throws down the stretch en route to the win. Jaden Ferris hit 6 free throws in the final minute. Ferris, who scored 25 points, was 10-for-14 from the line. Addie Johnson had a 21-point, 15-rebound double-double. Wakefield had 3 ladies who scored in double figures. McKenna Decker led with 11 points, while Rachel Borg and Alex Arenas each scored 10 points. Remsen St. Mary 71, Alta Aurelia 27. The Hawks outscored the Warriors 19-0 in the fourth quarter on Monday. Hawks freshman Whitney Jensen had 16 points. Claire Schroeder and Sydney Schroeder scored 11 and 10 points. AA sophomore Briella Engelman led the Warriors with 9 points. And then boys basketball. Unity Christian 73, Galen Catholic 48. The Knights outscored the Jays 24-7 in the third quarter. Carter DeYoung made six shots for a 19-point game. Tyrell Holshoff had 14 points and 5 rebounds. Keaton Bonderson led the Jays with 13 points, and he had 7 of those from the free throw line. Ridgeview 67, Manson Northwest Webster 38. Bo Clausen led the Raptors with 14 points. Cade Harriman scored 11, and Caleb Kistemacher had 10. Ridgeview led 41-17 at halftime. And that was all of the local sports stories. And just to round out this time, I am going to a story of some interest is a McDonald's sells spam burger in China. McDonald's is selling a sandwich made of spam topped with crushed Oreo cookies Monday in China, an attention-grabbing move that has raised eyebrows. Global brands from restaurants to automakers sometimes roll out offbeat products to appeal to Chinese tastes in the populous and intensely competitive market. This is undoubtedly one of them. "I thought it was delicious," said a comment on the microblog service. "Is that because I love McDonald's too deeply, or is it something wrong with my taste?" The sandwich is made of 2 slices of Spam, a product of Hormel Foods, and Mondelez International's Oreo cookies topped with mayonnaise. McDonald's Corporation said the sandwich was part of a series of members-only promotions to be released on Mondays in China. "There is no need to release unnecessary products," said the comment left on the company's microblog account. It received more than 2,000 likes. McDonald's said it's planned to sell no more than 400,000 of the lunch meat burgers. It wasn't clear how many have been sold and how many people who flooded social media with scathing comments had eaten one. "When you hate someone but have to invite him to dinner, you can ask him to eat a McDonald's Oreo lunch meat burger," said a separate comment. And that concludes today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, December 22nd. I'm your reader, Dagna. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website from iowaradioreading.org at any time. And thank you so much for listening today. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. Shortly after modern humans arrived in Europe, the Neanderthals disappeared, and scientists think we had something to do with it. Neanderthals, or their direct ancestors, migrated out of Africa and into the Middle East and Europe around 250,000 years ago. Soon, they were well adapted to the environment. Large eyes helped them see in the longer nights and darker winters. Stout bodies helped them retain heat and handle large prey, and provided space for the large liver and kidneys needed for a diet heavy in protein. Their brains were as big as ours, but spent processing power on their greater visual and motor abilities. This may not have allowed them to develop higher communication or conceptual thinking to match ours, which may have been their downfall. Modern humans arrived on the scene 45,000 years ago, less physically adapted, but more mentally adaptable. We had cooperative hunting methods superior to the Neanderthals, allowing us to outcompete them for food, and perhaps reducing the large herbivore populations that they depended on. We also had superior tools and weapons. When there were conflicts between the groups, as there have been among tribes throughout history, our superior technology probably allowed us to prevail. But we weren't only fighting. There must have been considerable interbreeding, since we can find 1-3% of the Neanderthal genome in modern man. Which means the Neanderthals never completely disappeared. A little bit of them is alive in us today. I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.